Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Do you know who beats themselves up the most after a loss? The coaches and the players do. You want to talk about personal? Okay? Personal. You don't think that? I mean, the coaches go over every single play, go through every single, did we do this right? Did we, you know, was that play call right? They dissect everything, win, lose, or draw. Well, I guess in college football, there's no more draw. Players, same thing. So as badly as you feel, they feel worse. Trying to get that taste out of their mouth. And in the process of doing that, if they can do that on Saturday night, they'll make you feel better as well. Okay. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street at Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Yep, another NFL game where the winner did not crack 20 points.
That's good. Scott puts it down. That's good. The kick is good. And the Chargers win it in overtime.
19-16. Joe Buck with the call on ESPN last night. You okay? I mean, I sent over from Wise an entire package of brown paper bags for you to breathe into.
Thank you. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully I won't need them much.
You're a wreck. I mean, Cortez pitched no better than okay in game two. I watched the game in Ann Arbor. In fact, the Guardians helped him out a lot because if you're talking about the number of strikes he actually threw without swings, right? He didn't throw a lot of strikes in game two. That high pitch, for whatever reason, the first three innings, the Guardians went after it, and helped him out a lot. And then you notice what they did in the fourth and fifth innings. They laid off, and he started walking guys. So he was no better than okay. So we'll see how he is today. Savali, well, there's a reason you're not the 1, 2, or 3 guy. So Aaron's going to have to survive today. All right. Bullpens in the end. Let's turn now to the miracle at Acature. For some reason, the Steelers won. And Mitchell Trubisky came off the bench to do it. Neil Coulong joins us, sir. Always a pleasure.
None at all. None in that locker room either. I know that.
Well, that's the story. Evidently up in wherever. Well, I guess it was at the Jets game. That there was some sort of incident that opened the door for Kenny. So what does it say about Trubisky that he's replaced, he's not the starter, something happens, his number's called, and he played the way he did?
You know, I hate to say things like this because we gotta unpack a few layers with this to really get into it. But my honest opinion of watching the 12 throws that Mitch Trubisky had in a relief effort Sunday versus Tampa Bay was he basically didn't do what he had been coached to do up to this point. He took chances. He made some risky throws. Those weren't throws that you necessarily coach a player up to take. They were very tight windows. He didn't check down at all, and they were in the lead. If there was a time this year that the strategy that it seems both quarterbacks have been subjected to this point this season, if there was a time for them to really utilize that, it would have been, we're up, we got to milk the clock. If the throw is not there, if you're not certain of it, don't make it. But third and 11, third and 15, he hit Chase Claypool, of all people, on two monster throws, biggest throws of the year for the Steelers up to this point. And he put them on the money. And credit to Claypool, too, because they were not easy catches. They weren't high-percentage throws by any stretch. They weren't high-percentage catches either. They two probably most maligned players on that offense stepped up huge when the team needed them to. And then Trubisky added 10 on a rush that they needed to have. So, to me, it almost seemed more like Mitch said, you know, never mind. I'm going to do this myself. If you're not going to help me out with what you're telling me to do, I'm going to go out and do what I know that I can do. And he played without question, without even the shadow of a doubt, the best that a quarterback has played this season in one half. And maybe you go back the last 2 years for the same thing. He was on point. He moved the offense. It's obvious that guys were responding to him. They were jumping all over him after he rushed for that first down. He even slid. He went head first into that. Very impressive output from him on Sunday. And, you know, I hate to say this just because it opens up Pandora's box for all kinds of other things, but the only thing I can logically conclude is that he didn't do what they had been telling him to do this whole time, because where was that? Why didn't that happen before? Why didn't you throw to that window? Why didn't you hit a player at that angle before? Why is it that you're checking down in the fourth quarter when you're in the lead on third and eight for two of the games that they played? Why were you doing that if this is the type of performance you're capable of putting out there? It's baffling, but I know what I saw, and Mitch Trubisky played at a high level on Sunday.
And then defensively, they hold the Buccaneers with Tom Brady at quarterback, and Evans and Godwin played, and Fournette played, to four field goals. And then, of course, the one touchdown finally late, and then they stopped the two-point conversion. What kind of job did they do?
I don't think you can really quantify how far above board as a unit that defense played. And I will add this, and I understand that the controversy as far as Tom Brady not going to the walkthrough on Friday, not practicing, being with the team, all of that, how much of an impact that might have had. What I know is Brady won from the beginning of the game. He didn't look right. It just didn't look like he was even close to the same guy he used to be. I think he fell off that cliff that we saw Ben fall off of. But two, the defense stood on its head the entire game. I mean, we were waiting for something. You know, Fournette gets a carry or two here and there. They move the ball a little bit. Nothing substantial. They didn't give up any big plays. And this is a defense without T.J. Watt yet again. And that's a unit that has had basically no pass rush in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks now, something like that. Made a couple big plays, hit Brady, put him on the ground. A lot of A-gap pressure. Cam Hayward played one of the best games he's played in a while. That says a lot for him, considering what he's done the last couple of years. Larry Ogunjobi played out of his mind, in my opinion. They said he was hurt. He didn't look hurt at all. A phenomenal performance from him. All of these are key contributions to a defense that was fairly described as their second half preseason unit. I mean, they had guys playing from the practice squad that, you know, people didn't know were on the team. And for them to go out and perform the way they did against Tom Brady, against those receivers, and it's not like it was, you know, nothing. Brady wasn't that bad. They confused him. They rattled him. There's no reason he shouldn't be able to complete several passes against James Pierre. And they tried. They threw at him seven times. Yep. They completed two. Two of them. Both of them to Godwin, I believe. Godwin had a nice game because he's a good player. You're going to make plays. But as a defensive secondary, Terrell Edmonds, James Pierre, the level in which they played at was so far above and beyond what we could have reasonably expected. It was just shocking. I mean, watching it again, it was like, wow, they were really, really good. I don't know where this has been. I don't know what it took, but you have to take your hats off to the coaching staff, because really they prepared a group of guys who, you know, reasonably are, you know, backups. They're not starters for a reason. They did an excellent job, and that was a great performance all around on Sunday.
I think that's the best game I've seen Bush play in 3 years.
Bush made a play. Bush, I even said that too. I promise you, and you of all people would know this, before the game, 6 months ago, whenever, there is no time I ever thought it possible, I would have said three stars to Mitch Trubisky, two stars to Chase Claypool and one star to Devin Bush.
Yeah.
There is no way I ever would have said that. But honestly, that's what it was. That was Brady tied the game. That play worked. The receiver was there. He was open. Brady delivered a good ball. Bush just made a play. Bush played better on that play. I don't know who's ever said that. I mean, when was the last time Bush hit a ball in the air? I mean, it just he hasn't made plays like that basically since before he tore his ACL. And on top of that, he did an excellent job. I mean, they got gassed a little bit on the run, but the effort against the run overall was outstanding in that game. And Bush was a big part of that. He played really well.
And credit where credit's due. He certainly did in that game. Now they got Miami. I expect Tua to be back. And I'm going to guess that Kenny Pickett can't play this week, especially with the caution in the league at this point about concussions. What's your thought?
I think Mike Tomlin was quick to point out, and he did this a couple times in his press conference this afternoon, that Kenny Pickett has cleared concussion protocol. So did Tua before he got back on the field the last time. Mm-hmm. And that isn't to say anything. I mean, really, what we're talking about here is spirit of the law versus letter of the law, okay? The spirit of the law is the guy has a head injury, showing symptoms and all that. It can come at any point. But at this moment in time, this snapshot, he doesn't have them. So we're going to go ahead and take him out of this, not test him again, and he's cleared. The hit that Tua took that sent him back again and caused him to miss 2 weeks wasn't like a substantial hit, but it looked very similar to what happened to Kenny Pickett. I've had that happen before. You get hit, your helmet goes back and hits the ground.
Yep.
It's a pretty jarring experience. You know, it feels a lot worse than it looks. I know that. If Pickett is clear to play and that's who they want to go, okay. It's just such such an oddly timed situation for Tua to come back after all of that blew up. Not because of him, but because of what happened to him and how that was handled, which, you know, I'll say this. By the mutually agreed upon rules of the concussion protocol, the Dolphins did everything they were supposed to do. The UNC did everything he was supposed to do. If the union wants to get upset about that, okay, one, you signed off on it. Two, you probably should have included language that said, look, if we see this and we know what it is, we need to take him off the field. You didn't do that. Okay, you knowingly didn't do that. Don't try to pin it on the league as if it's their fault. You're an active part of this as well. That's what collective bargaining is. You are responsible for it as well. Now, you want to change that? Good. You probably should. You could have changed that a month ago. You could have changed it a year ago. You didn't do that. So for Tua, you can understand they take extra special caution with him. He clears concussion protocol the same day Teddy Bridgewater did.
Yep.
Teddy Bridgewater, Tua's backup, got a concussion as well. They had their third stringer playing. Then, of course, the third string quarterback gets hurt. So they have to put Bridgewater back on the field. But he cleared protocol.
Right.
Probably too late to have played in that game. But now they basically said ahead of time, look, Tua's playing next week, okay? That's just the way this is going to be, and we're going to put him out there. What's going to happen to either player who's coming off the last time they played in a game? They left the field with concussion symptoms. Putting them both on the field at the same time in a primetime game, it's so NFL for something to happen. I mean, I'm not rooting for it. I'm not trying to laugh at it. It's just it seems like the probability of this this scenario, this situation in the league coming up again, it's really high in this game considering. So I don't know. I think you could have any one of five combinations of quarterbacks in this game. It wouldn't surprise me at all. If something were to happen that puts both starters out of the game at some point. I'm not rooting for that. I'm not predicting it. I'm just saying you can't just bounce back from a concussion simply. Just because the symptoms don't show up at the time that you are being checked out doesn't mean you don't have one, and it doesn't mean that you are not at a very elevated risk of suffering another one. And that's kind of where that's the point where I think both of the starting quarterbacks are going to be entering this game. So a lot of eyes are going to be on it for sure.
Finally, they are also on Sunday night going to be honoring the 72 Dolphins, the one team that was able to go through the regular season undefeated and the playoffs undefeated and win the Super Bowl, winning Super Bowl VII. It is The interesting part is that in Pittsburgh, it is a subnote because 50 years ago, Franco Harris and the Immaculate Reception, and of course, Roberto Clemente passing away 1 week later. The interesting part was that the AFC Championship game that year was not in Miami because the rules were different, that it was actually in Pittsburgh. Just your thoughts historically on the 72 Dolphins.
I think in many ways, the 72 Dolphins were kind of the apex and the beginning of the wind down of real power trap football.
No doubt.
The passing era was ushered in not long after. Call it realistically five seasons.
Bob Greasy in back-to-back Super Bowls attempted a total of 14 passes in Super Bowl
exactly.
7 and 8.
And that was a team that was extremely difficult to stop on the ground. So, I mean, you see why. But that pattern and that style was still mimicked. You know, Shula still wanted to play football like that. Walsh wanted to not reinvent the game, but there were ways that you could coach a passing offense to be a lot more efficient and a lot more explosive. The NFL saw the draw of this. And you and I have talked about this too. The greatest innovation in sports history is the forward pass.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For the level of popularity of the sport. And with that, the lengths that the NFL has gone to prop up passing, therefore scoring, therefore offense, therefore offensive coaching, and with it, the heroes, quarterbacks, the most important position in all the sports. That started in probably the mid-70s. They were throwing the ball, but it became much more efficient. And it wasn't probably even, for what we understand of it, perfected until the last 10 years or so. They still were chucking the ball 15, 20 yards down the field. And, you know, Terry Bradshaw's chucking 25 interceptions in a Pro Bowl year for him. They weren't good at it yet. They weren't as rhythmic with it. But the 72 Dolphins didn't care about that at all. And Bob Greasy is a rightful Hall of Fame member. Keep that in mind.
Yes.
They ran the air out of the ball. They ran the air out of their opponents. They ran the air out of the stadium. And they were really good at it. They were undefeated for a reason. It was really hard to stop that. And certainly, like everything, in my opinion, with football, it is so subjective to the era that they were playing. And those eras are a lot shorter if you look at it in terms of context of history, then they might seem like. But the running era, the real 3 yards in a cloud of dust era of football was the longest. And the Dolphins, I think, were the pinnacle of that at the end of the time that was there. In 78, against the Rams, you got, you know, two teams in the Super Bowl scoring 30 points and a quarterback throwing for 300 yards and these, you know, acrobatic downfield catches. That highlighted the NFL at that point. That was only 5 years later.
Right.
So, I mean, it's really interesting to see how different the game was played, and you see up front, really in kind of a current events way, how much it has changed and why it changed. Because people really liked passing, and they still do. In the high offensive games are really what people want to see, and that was just not the way the game was played at all back then. Dolphins could win 20-10, and it was completely one-sided. You know, today that seems like a Thursday night snooze fest compared to you know, a lot of what we normally see.
My friend, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong joining us on the show, talking about some Steeler football after we talked with Scott Fransky about the Phillies. All right, any update on your game to this point? And Judge hit like a five-run homer or something?
Unfortunately, no. He struck out again, but there were no boos this time, just putting that out there. And they have two on with one out, with standing at the plate and a 1-0 count. And Cleveland's pitching coach just went out to talk to Savali.
I'd bunt. All right, I'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors.
More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Brady, over the middle, batted down! What a play by Devin Bush to keep this a two-point game!
So did you guys stand and come through?
Three, run, home run, a Stantonian blast. And the Yankees lead it 3-0.
Oh, thank goodness it wasn't the fifth inning. Oh, goodness. He just struck out. It would have been a throw him out, strike him out, double play.
And Savali is gone. After a third of an inning.
Well, what do you expect when you're throwing your fourth guy? I mean, that's where depth does come into play. I mean, that is the depth of it. And the Yankees are going to need it. Their bullpen is struggling. But they're going to need all the runs they can get early. Although they're going to have Clay Holmes, I think, available today.
Correct.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
So what do you guys pay Stan? What, $50 billion? Something like that?
It seems like it.
He ought to hit one once in a while.
He's actually now hit 11 home runs in his first 22 postseason games now.
Wow. Boy, I kind of feel like I'm watching the new age David Ortiz. All right. Ortiz, like, he had, like, his in the ninth inning, you know, things like that. Like, you know, it's like, okay, you know, need a grand slam, got it. He strikes out. You know, I got it. You know, 688 in the World Series, got it. Has Stan never been in the World Series? I know he's watched it.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
He ain't getting there this year. All right. You're going to have to play right away tomorrow, aren't you?
Yeah, not ideal. And, of course, Jameson Taillon is going to be on the mound. So, yeah, that's an L for game one if they win. But you know what? I'd rather take that chance than have him start this game, which would have been yesterday. So I thought the rainout was a blessing in disguise for the Yankees, because I'd much rather have Nasty Nestor on the mound today than I would Jameson Taillon.
I'll tell you right now, Cortez is one of those guys, and he's like Johnny Cueto. They get away with a balk all the time. I don't get it. Why bother having a balk rule? I see balks called in the ML Draft League like it's water being handed out at a 10K. It's like, hey, you got another balk. What are we doing? Cortez, you know, he balks all the time. I'm like sitting there like going, okay, you're not going to call that? Cueto's the same way. And Cueto's now at the White Sox. You're confused. You have no idea what I'm talking about. All right. You can't say that about my guy.
No, yeah, I get it. Yeah.
You can't say that about my guy. Yeah, I can. He balks all the time. Okay. But you got to get guys on first for it. You can balk, so. One quick note, by the way, on something that evidently has come up. And again, Jack and I are in the booth, so we don't see it. Brian Tripp did relate to us that there was something happened in the tunnel at Michigan Stadium, right? Yelling, screaming, whatever. Okay. I know Fritz Kreisler designed that place. What the heck was he thinking? I remember the first time I walked through that tunnel at Michigan Stadium. It was 1994, first time. I'm looking around, and I'm like, okay, so Penn State's locker room's there, and Michigan's locker room's there. What total complete idiot thought of this? There was a word that ran through my mind. I'm thinking, this is asinine. Now, for anybody that's complaining about what happened, and again, I didn't see it. I want you to go to YouTube and YouTube Michigan Ohio State tunnel. Because Fox kind of plays it up always bigger. Look at this in the tunnel, like the gladiators coming into the Coliseum. You know, look at the tunnel. They yell at each other, screaming, being held back, yelling. All right. Okay. Google that. All right. It makes no sense. I'm sitting there in the Big Ten. Like, you go to Ohio State, Penn State enters from the near side, goes across the field. Ohio State enters from the far side, comes across the field. Right? You go to Iowa, different sides. Wisconsin, same thing. Michigan has both teams side by side. Now, I will tell you one other place that is side by side with one tunnel. You know what that place is? The Coliseum in Los Angeles. Did I tell you the John Robinson story?
That I don't think.
Okay. I'm just doing whatever I can to take your mind off the game, because I got a feeling if I don't, you're going to be making frequent trips to the bathroom. So Notre Dame is going to play USC. John Robinson's the coach at USC. Jerry Faust is the coach at Notre Dame. And the two locker rooms at the Coliseum, if you've never been there, are right next to each other. So Faust is in there, and he's delivering one of those fire and brimstone speeches about, you know, Notre Dame tradition, the tradition of Notre Dame, the Four Horsemen tradition, Newt Rockne tradition, Frank Leahy tradition, Heisman Trophy winners tradition, Paul Hornung tradition, John Heward tradition, going on and on. National championships, the Notre Dame tradition, da 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 da. Let's go! Yeah, they go running out of the locker room. Meanwhile, Robinson is standing in the USC locker room. Right. And they all go in, and everything settles down. Notre Dame runs on the field. Robinson gets up in front of his team. He says, oh, by the way, there's one part of the tradition that he left out. They never win here. Let's go.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
It's a true story. All the USC players are listening because they're right. Yeah, tradition of Fighting Force, man. New Rockney, LA, Heisman Trophy winners, national championship, the tradition, let's go. They're all running out. Robinson Conley gets up. He says, that's the one part of the tradition he left out is that they never win here. Let's go. You want to know what Chuck Knoll's pregame speech was?
I don't think I ever knew that, actually, but I'm sure it was something simple like that.
Guys, it's 10 of 1 right now. He says, we've got to be out there for the national anthem by 12:55, so let's go to the tunnel.
There you go.
And they won how many Super Bowls?
That'd be 4 under Chuck Knoll.
Meanwhile, you've got a guy jumping up and down the sidelines because he became the first coach ever to have a team go off sides.
Yeah.
Like I'm sitting there like going, I'm sitting at home going, what's he doing?
Yeah.
Like quietly just like pumping fists, like, good, we got him. That's great.
As that was happening, I was glad that was happening, because as that was happening, I was screaming to the TV, take the points, kick the field goal.
And he's like, okay. Okay. Nick, you're not the first one to do that this weekend. It's like, okay.
Oh, my almighty!
Wow. Interesting. All right. So, we're doing everything we can to take your mind off the game. So, let's see. What is the score of your game? You probably have the... Do you have the TV on? I don't know.
It's yeah, I'm watching it on... I'm watching it on my phone on the TBS app. It's still 3-0, two outs in the top of the second.
Great. Is he throwing a... Oh, he lost his no-hitter. God, he's so nasty, too.
Yeah, that's right. He's Nasty Nestor.
Oh, yeah. You know, we all want him. But 17 pitches, 12 strikes. He's done well so far. He's done very, very well. So, and for the Guardians, it's going to be one reliever after another. That's going to be the story the rest of the way. They can't really do much of anything else. Then you got Yordan Alvarez. I saw him hit home runs like in like the ninth inning. That's what the big timers do, you know that?
And strike three.
I already knew that. I already got that. My thing's way ahead of you, whatever you're watching. I already knew the inning was over.
Oh.
Seriously, I've got GameCast here. Like, okay, Guardians defense, strike three is out. And that was 30, 40 seconds ago. You want me to tell you what's going on? I mean, it sounds like you need, like, some help here.
I'm good.
You guys are really cocky today. You started Hicks. I was like, wow.
Better than what was happening before. Any way to keep IK off the field, it's just desperation at this point.
Cabrera's playing shortstop. Is that Cabrera's natural position? Is he actually a shortstop, not an outfielder?
Basically, yeah. Because that's what I'm pretty sure he played that mostly at Scranton Wilkes-Barre, but he still played the outfield. So then when the Yankees brought him up, it gave him that ability to shift guys around when they needed to.
Yeah, because they need his bat in the lineup. He's hitting 125. All right, so it's great.
At least he's making plays in the field.
But I thought that was the whole thing with IKF.
It was, and then when he stopped doing that, then he became completely useless.
You guys didn't boo him, did you?
I know I was.
Oh, jeez. You guys are... You want an honest assessment? You guys are miserable. I mean... You guys... Honest to goodness. You guys need to go out and have some fun.
But at least they got rid of Gary Sanchez for him, and I knew that was basically going to be getting rid of a bucket of balls, so there you go.
You guys are miserable. I mean, you hate everything and everybody. I mean, Judge strikes out a couple times. Now you hate him. I mean, I know he's hitting 118. Stanton's hitting 154, so don't tell me how much better he's hitting lately. He's hitting 154.
And that's a valid point, yeah.
He's pitching. He's hitting great. He's hitting 154. Ramirez, legitimate star, hitting 389. All right. Even Kwan leading off is hitting 444. Rest of the lineup, not so good. Yeah, it's going to be bullpen the rest of the way for the... And the Yankees can't even acquire Ohtani now, and they've got all this money just sitting there. With, like, Stanton's contract, would you refer to that as dead money? No, I'm just kidding. Just asking for a friend.
At the moment, no. Have there been times during the season where I've thought that? Yes.
How about against Houston? Yes.
Yes. Well, more last season than this season, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, 12 minutes done while you're watching the Yankees game, pacing back and forth, making frequent bathroom trips. I'm going to go to practice. that's okay with you. Kind of see what's going on.
Yeah, exactly right. We got to gear up for Saturday.
Yeah, I got to decide whether to cut my lawn Friday or Saturday.
You stole my... I was going to ask you that the minute I saw you in the press box on Saturday night. Did you cut the lawn today? I was saving that question for you when I see you on Saturday.
No. I'm going to probably do all the stuff on Friday. I actually have people here that I've got to... I don't know. Be around, help out, something. I don't know. It's like, okay. You know, it's in-law weekend. I got to make sure they get to the game. Okay, take care. I got to go.
Oh, by almighty!
Got to go to the booth, Sam. Take care. Here are the tickets. Have fun. Then we'll be outside the tunnel. Go from there. You wanted me to cut my lawn.
I just think it's the yearly, it's now the whiteout tradition is you cut the lawn at an inn.
Well, remember last year the whiteout was in September.
Right, yeah.
Right, so but yeah, we'll see. We'll see how Friday plays out. It's just I've got all day to do stuff like that. You know, I mean, that's what people don't realize. Okay, I got all day to do it. I might as well get some work done. I mean, I'm supposed to get 2 cords of wood delivered here. If they deliver it, I'm going to be stacking it. They haven't delivered it yet. I ordered two. This drives you nuts that I do this stuff.
But I fully embraced it. It's either got to be the stocking of the wood or the cutting of the lawn, weather permitting, depending on what time of the year the whiteout is. That should become your annual tradition before a whiteout game.
I played golf the day of the whiteout. I played golf the day of whiteouts. But, you know, just, I mean, what do you think I do the day of a game? Do you think I sit there and, like, bite my nails and pace back and forth? Or do you think I put my feet up and have a cup of coffee in the morning? What do you think I do?
You, cup of coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cup of coffee, maybe have a bagel, you know? Like, okay, they look around and go, it's time to go. Okay, all set. It drives you nuts. You in the suit want me to pace and like, okay, got a big game. I'm on the air. We're on 60 stations and Sirius XM.
It's just funny, that's all.
I mean, the suit couldn't believe I cut my own lawn. I'm serious.
F-O-U-L-E.
I'm not joking.
Yeah, everybody's got to cut their lawn.
Right, you go ask him. No, he thinks I hire somebody to do it. I'm sitting there like, oh, no, I cut it myself. You don't understand. I'm cheap. I'm not going to pay somebody to do it when I can do it.
What do you think, Bill Hillgrove doesn't cut his lawn? Scott Foresky doesn't cut his lawn?
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Get out. Get out. Get out. Yes. He has done it.
All right.
4-0.
Boy, that's awesome. When he's in San Francisco next year, are you going to bag that thing?
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
miles per hour, 394 feet into right field.
Both thoroughly irrelevant. I'm serious. I mean, I think those are nice stats, the whole thing. The one I love is that would have been a home run in 16 different ballparks. Well, it's not a home run in this ballpark, so sit down. Who cares? The wind's different. The dimensions are different. Well, who cares? I mean, I see stuff like that. I go, what are we doing here? All right, give people pertinent facts. Now, the addition of how hard it was hit and how far, those are interesting for the fans. So, yeah, you should, after it's all said and done, say that. But I always love the one where the ground ball was hit and the fielder feels it. He scorched that thing at 102. Okay, why don't you give the fielder credit for fielding the 102-mile-an-hour ground ball and throwing him out by 32 steps? We're losing perspective on some of these things, not on how far it went and exit velocity. All right, those are nice addendums. But I'm hearing analysis of, he hit that ground ball at 102. Wow. That's not the deal. The deal is the guy fielded it. The guy threw him out. That's the deal. In fact, give the fielder credit for fielding something that was 102. How about that? You never hear that on broadcast, do you?
No, it's a good point. Perfectly valid. No, you don't.
Valid? That's the reality of it. I don't care if you hit it hard. He fielded it. Well, guess what? I'm going to give the fielder credit for fielding a hard-hit ground ball. Great reflexes to do something like that. Kind of like Rizzo on that play in game three. Oh, geez, he didn't get that one, did he? All right,
It's all right. We got another one.
It's one of the rarities that Rizzo didn't get. Rarities. He is a great first baseman. So you guys are home free, right?
So far, so good through two.
You didn't get another one. It's 4-0. I thought you were getting...
We got another run in the inning. After Rizzo struck out, I'm like, all right, whatever. We got another run. It's 4-0.
Oh, I thought you said, we just got another one.
No. I said, it's okay. We got one. It's all right. We got one. Because Rizzo struck out to end the inning.
They got Miles Straw coming up second, so that's going to be 4-2. That's right. He hasn't hit any home runs all season. All right. We'll come back. Wrap it up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
All right.
You, sir, are my hero.